Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. My name is Zachary Smith. I am your host here this week, as I am every week, excited to talk to you again about another interesting episode of NXT. We are coming off of Halloween Havoc last week, in my opinion, and seems as though in most of your opinions as well, a very successful show, a very good return to form for the Halloween Havoc name. A name that WWE was always hesitant to use. You always got the feeling that Vince McMahon doesn't like using other companies' stuff. It has to be a WWE product. And so they never used it. But Triple H seems more open to that concept. And so we've gotten War Games, and we've gotten Halloween Havoc, and we've gotten a lot of interesting things going on in NXT that harken back to the past with their own kind of refiguring and polish. It was very fun. And so, in the old days of NXT, when we were doing a show after a pay-per-view, or a network special, or a special event, it would basically just be a recap show. Those days seem to be over, as we generally just move forward. I much prefer this way, because it would be very hard to do. One of the early episodes I did of this podcast was basically an hour-long promo for Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, and while that was a very good story, it was also tricky to talk about for 30 or 40 minutes. But this show shouldn't be hard to talk about. Now, you can always find me on Twitter first. I am at ZachNXT, that's at ZachNXT. We are always talking about wrestling or other fun things, some not-so-fun things over there. I usually get my topics from Twitter. You can hit me up over there, let me know what you like, didn't like from this week in wrestling. I'd love to hear from you. Now, usually we talk about the news and notes, what's going on in the world of wrestling. I was at work, and I was listening to podcasts, as I often do at work. And in this case, I was listening to Corey Graves' podcast. The name escapes me at the moment. I don't always listen to it, but depending on the guest, I will. And here, very recently, he had Mustafa Ali on, the now leader of Retribution, the former SmackDown hacker, so on so forth. And I've always really liked Mustafa Ali. He generally, at least he would, cut promos that he seemed to film himself. They were always outside, they were always very different, very cool. And he's obviously fantastic in the ring. And very much a unrealized talent or an untapped potential star that they never really do anything with. And there's a few interesting things going on in this podcast that I thought it would be fun to talk about. So he's talking about his early days becoming a wrestler, basically having to leave his pregnant wife in Chicago because he had to move to Tampa when he got signed by WWE. It's a great story. You should go listen to it. They do talk about that story that we are all familiar with, I imagine, where Mustafa Ali was supposed to be the one in the Elimination Chamber, not Kofi Kingston. And essentially what happens is Mustafa Ali has a match with Randy Orton. And Randy Orton, I believe while he was stomping him, messed him up. He got hurt. And he said it wasn't anyone's fault, but that's what happened. And he basically thought he was fine, thought he could push through. And then one of the referees came by him and asked him if he was okay. He said, uh-huh. And then the referee, he said correctly that, you know, he told the doctors, and doctors had him come to the back to check it out. And he says that he was sitting and he was basically gripping both sides of the table because he just knew that if he let go of the table, he was going to fall over. And I believe the doctor said, let me see your hands. And he put up a big stink about it and had to show him his hands. And as soon as he showed him his hands and let go of the table, passed out, fell over. So obviously he was not going to be able to compete on SmackDown in the Gauntlet match or Elimination Chamber. He posits that he would have won that Gauntlet match and he would have put on a show at Elimination Chamber. And he talks about the fact that he has no bad blood towards Kofi Kingston for that. It just really sucked. He doesn't like what ifs, but they're unavoidable. He said the problem that he had is not so much that he got hurt, but the fact that when he was ready to come back, you had a lot of potential stories. You had a story with Daniel Bryan, who when he was the WWE champion, was Ali's first match on SmackDown, just about. And he's probably a big part of why Mustafa Ali is got to the main roster. And then you have a story there. You have a story tailor-made with Kofi Kingston. I got hurt, you got successful. That would have been a great story, and I think would have been some great matches. You also had a story with him and Brock Lesnar. He was on the ladder about to grab the briefcase, Mustafa Ali was, at Money in the Bank. And Brock Lesnar decided, though he was not in the match, he was going to come down to the ring. Brock Lesnar gets the briefcase. I don't think that that's how that... A couple of things, now that I think about it. One, that's certainly not how that match works, that you can just come in and just do whatever. That's not... That can't be how that works. But if it is, why doesn't every Money in the Bank match have literally everybody from the roster just come into the ring and try and win? Because if Brock got to keep it, that means you don't have to be in the match, you just have to bring the briefcase down. And that's a rule that I never would have thought of. That's the kind of thing where if I were listening to somebody fantasy book something and they suggested it, I would stop listening to them. But it's a thing that happened. So you had a story with Brock Lesnar. Now, I'm not so naive to think that you're ever going to do a story between Mustafa Ali and Brock Lesnar. But the point is, there were a lot of potential stories, and the WWE didn't seem interested in any of them. So they do the SmackDown hacker thing, and then they do the WWE thing where they get bored with something that's their idea and just stop doing anything with it. They're at some point going to say that this was all part of the grand story. It wasn't. It definitely wasn't. And then he's talking about retribution. And he was talking about the promo that he cut just, was it this week? Where he basically, the line, the important line from it was that this company couldn't figure out how to make a dollar with a guy named Mustafa Ali. And I understand I'm saying that differently. He pronounced it differently in the promo when he was talking about it. I don't know the significance of that, but he basically said he was kind of laughing at the idea that wrestling fans have focused only on the fact that, oh, the masks look stupid. And then he said that they are actually symbolic. And he said that he's saying people can't make a dollar with somebody named Mustafa Ali and people can only focus on, yeah, but that mask behind him looks stupid. And they basically go on a couple-minute old guy rant of people today have no attention spans. They want the answers right away. Just let us tell the story. And this is the moment of the podcast that made me decide to talk about this. I would like to preface this by saying that I am a huge Mustafa Ali fan. I thought that that was a great line in a otherwise forgettable promo. That's not his fault, it's the fault of the terrible story that they are having them tell. Now, the problem I have here is that a lot of times with wrestlers, and this isn't even just older wrestlers, this is really, it seems a good amount of wrestlers. What will happen is WWE will be telling us a terrible story. And I don't mean to overreact when I say that. Usually stuff is closer to the middle than it is great or bad in WWE. But they'll be telling us a terrible story. Say, for example, a group of short people dressed in ninja gear shows up and starts lighting things on fire, but only safely in the parking lot, and occasionally attacking, but not at pay-per-views because they're considerate. And then the actual members who suddenly have a growth spurt and show up and have dumb masks on that I still do not understand the point of, despite it being so deep and so meaningful. And then they accomplish precisely nothing. They're drafted to Raw when they shouldn't have been. They get Mustafa Ali as their leader. Awesome. Love that part. The next week there is no promo. There's nothing. They interrupt The Fiend and Alexa Bliss. The Fiend and Alexa Bliss are so concerned that they do not even move. They just teleport away. And then The Fiend interferes in their match with the Hurt Business and lays them out. They have looked like chumps against the Hurt Business. And to my knowledge, all that they have done the entire time that they have been on television is they have complained about not getting their shots. Now, I need to specify again that I understand that this is not Mustafa Ali or Mia Yim or Shane Thorne or Dominic Dijakovic or Dio Madden's faults. All of them are trying to make chicken salad out of this chicken stuff that they have been given. But at some point, a hole is too deep to climb out of. Now, I would have been fine if there had been deeper meaning to their name changes or their masks or their behaviors. I would have been fine with that. I've said a few times, there's a seed of a cool idea in Retribution. But all we've gotten is weeds so far. And it's very easy to sit there and say, oh, fans just said, oh, their masks look stupid, and condense that to be their only problem. Our problem with Retribution is not so much that the masks look stupid, though they do. It's that they are pointless, they look like losers, they sound like a scorned lover in high school writing poems, they are completely ineffective. It's not that we want the story right now and we have no patience. I think people misunderstand that. It's that we don't want to sit around and watch your bad story. We want this to be over, not because we want to see the ending. We want it to be over so everybody can go their separate ways. This is a group of people that never explain themselves. Somebody on Twitter put up several posts of why each member of Retribution was wronged, and that's why they're in. And I think Mia Yim quote tweeted it, and now they're just acting like that's what it was, though they never explained it. Mia Yim was a competitor in NXT. She, not too long ago, had a one-on-one match with Charlotte Flair for the women's title, and she was, the way they booked it, not even close to a contender. She was in a story with Candice LeRae. She was doing things on NXT. Mercedes Martinez was too. She was lucky enough to be sent back to NXT. Dio Madden was an announcer that stood up to Brock Lesnar when he was in a feud with Rey Mysterio, and I believe Brock F5'd him, and we basically didn't see him again. The idea being that they didn't give him a chance to redeem himself. That is not what happened. The problem is that we know that Dio wasn't working out as a commentator. He wanted to go back to being a wrestler. Not to mention, we saw him on Raw Underground. So he went from a commentator to being on Raw, albeit in a ripoff Fight Club. He was doing fine. I pointed out that Dominic Dijakovic was attacked by Karrion Kross, choked out while Keith Lee just looked on, and then Keith Lee just went to the main roster and didn't give it a second thought, except that the reason Keith Lee didn't do anything is because while he was in a chokehold, Dijakovic said, no, don't get involved, so Keith didn't. He then went on to fight Karrion Kross, motivated very much by the fact that Dijakovic was attacked. Dijakovic didn't reappear because he was going to the main roster. Then Keith Lee came to the main roster. They were doing different things, so why would Keith Lee check on you? You're clearly fine. Shane Thorne, now Slapjack, was on Raw. I'm going to be honest, he's not super interesting, so I don't really know what's up with him. He is not wronged. He is a tag team guy that doesn't have a tag team partner anymore. Even in NXT, the tag team, I TM41? Is that what it was? I don't remember. They weren't a memorable tag team. They were the 17th most interesting team in NXT at that time. That's not a betrayal. That's, you're not that interesting at the moment. So all of these stories would be great, I agree, if that's the story that was being told to me, but it's not. I'm getting the story of a group of losers who banded together because people treated them like losers, and then they lose. And I really don't like to have to say that, because I like everybody involved in Retribution, and there is a seed of a good idea in it. But I am not somebody who has a short attention span. I have a great deal of patience, but I'm not going to sit through a bad story just so I appease you when you want to scream at me to give the stories a chance to develop. One, I don't think you know where you're going with it, so you don't know the story you're telling. And two, every single part of this has been a bad story. If I'm reading a bad book, I close the book. I don't read the other 200 pages hoping that by the end I'll be like, well, they really turned that around and wrapped up the story well. If people don't like your book, they close it. You can't get mad at the reader for writing a bad story. Let's talk about some good stories. Let's talk about NXT, though. Ember Moon is out first to kick it off. There's a quick recap of some of the highlights from Halloween Havoc last night. Dakota Kai is out next, flanked by Raquel Gonzalez, fresh off of her loss at Halloween Havoc. Ember, toward at the end of the match, is going for the Eclipse, but Raquel Gonzalez distracts her by getting on the apron, also distracts the referee, and Dakota Kai grabs her off the top rope and hits the go-to kick to win. Go-to kick is still a finishing move that usually looks bad. It's up there with the cave-in by Cameron Grimes. It's just a move that by its default isn't going to look like it hurts. I'm sure it would, but it just doesn't look like it does. That's weird. Ember Moon loses. That's an interesting way to have Ember go. Seemed like they were going to do more with Ember, but maybe we're just setting up something with her and Dakota Kai. I don't know. Feels like she might be middling a little bit, but that's fine. We cut to the back and Shotzi Blackheart's being interviewed. She says that she gets to pick her opponent tonight, and she chooses Toni Storm. She says she's always been a fan of Storm, and Shotzi wants to test herself. So we're going to get Shotzi Blackheart, Toni Storm tonight. Somehow, in the very next segment, there's already a video package. And what do you know? Toni Storm is talking about fighting Miss Shotzi Blackheart, and she talks about how Tony's more aggressive now, and she's going to use Shotzi as a stepping stone. You stop it. Shotzi is nobody's stepping stone. You take it back. Toni Storm's great. Shotzi Blackheart's the best. I don't want to hear this blasphemous nonsense. There's a video package of Io Shirai next. Io Shirai says that she wants to fight Rhea Ripley. I'm good with it. You don't usually see the champion challenging somebody, but it makes sense. These two have a history. There's a score to settle there in some capacity. I have been on Team Rhea Ripley taking the title from Io Shirai. I thought that we were going to get one or two more opponents for Io before we went to Rhea Ripley, because I think that Rhea would win that title back. But if we're going to do it now, let's do it now. It's going to be a fantastic match. Rhea Ripley is red hot, even more so than she was before she won the title the first time, it seems. Hard to gauge without a crowd, but whatever. So I'm good with it. Cut from that to the ring, and we have Killian Dane and Drake Maverick finally on the Hulu cut. I am aware that they've been on the show, and their skits have been very funny, but I only have time to watch the Hulu cut here, and whatever gets cut, must not have been that important. So I've missed watching live all of this ridiculous nonsense that's been going on that I love so much. I love that stupid theme music. I love how into it Drake Maverick is, and I especially love how Killian Dane and Wade Barrett are so not into it and so hate it and the music. You can feel the disgust in Wade Barrett's voice when he hears that theme song, and it's fantastic every time. Reminds me of Corey Graves when he was in NXT anytime Elias would come on, and he would just hate it so much, and it was always great. It appears as though all of Killian Dane and Drake Maverick's tag team moves consist of Killian Dane throwing Drake Maverick in some way, shape, or form at their opponent. That is great. He tags Drake Maverick too hard. It basically is a chest chop. Fantastic. We go split screen and a white SUV's pulling up and it's Pat McAfee arriving with Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch and Pete Dunne. Pat McAfee takes the camera from the cameraman. He's talking to his boys. They all walk in and they walk out to the ring. They come out and they attack both teams. McAfee is still at ringside recording. Small detail you might not have noticed, but the guys hit the enhancement talent team first. They're outside the ring. So technically the enhancement talent win. If you and I are fighting in a match, if somebody comes in and they hit me, I win by disqualification. If they hit you, you win by disqualification. So this enhancement team, whose name I did not catch, technically won this match. Now, everybody's now in the ring except Pat McAfee. And for just a second, they show a shot of Pat McAfee shooting the action. And behind him, you can see that the enhancement talent team is now on the entrance ramp about to walk to the back. And one of them is selling, and the other is selling, but also has his arm raised in victory because he is still taking this disqualification win as a total celebration moment. And it was for a split second, and I don't know that you would have even noticed it, but it made me laugh hard that this dude was like, "That's right, I win." That's fantastic. Pat McAfee says, "This is the greatest four men to ever come together in the history of the wrestling business." Now, I actually saw that quote on Twitter from WWE's Twitter account. MVP tweeted something to the effect of, "That's funny," talking about, obviously, the Hurt Business. And then Adam Cole added, "Yeah, that is funny." It's at this point that I remark that Pete Dunne looks like a kid whose mom is making him go to the store with him and he really doesn't want to. That is Pete Dunne's face all the time. And I'm good with it because McAfee, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch are always chumming it up. And Pete Dunne is done smiling. Pete Dunne is too ripped now to smile, and I'm fine with that. He's never been a big smile guy, if I remember correctly. They go to hang up, or start to hang up a banner. It's an Undisputed Era banner in memory of the group, because Pat McAfee says they ended them. McAfee starts running down some of the history of Undisputed Era. They talk about Roderick Strong turning on Pete Dunne in that tag team match to join Undisputed Era, which is a good thing to say, so that there's a reason Pete Dunne joined this weird group. They end up taking a vote, and they decide not to hang the banner, but to throw the banner in the trash. So they grab a trash can that's conveniently located next to lighter fluid, and Pete Dunne conveniently has a lighter. And they put the garbage can in the ring, they put the banner in the trash can, and then Pete Dunne puts lighter fluid in the can and then lights it on fire. A couple things. Pat McAfee is a really good talker. He's really good at being a heel or a bad guy. You wouldn't necessarily have thought that. I knew he'd be a good talker. I didn't know that they would make him a heel, and I didn't know how he would do. He is a born heel and a great talker. That he's a great addition to NXT. I always look forward to his segments. That being said, this segment was too long. They basically had time to discuss the banner, do some jokes, arrive, run down the whole darn near history of the Undisputed Era, state several times that they ended the Undisputed Era. They had time for a bunch of cutaway jokes. This just went on for a really long time. And it's weird to me that nobody from Undisputed Era was there. Usually with a segment like this that goes this long, if somebody says that they're like running down the history of another opponent, or they're really talking down about the opponent will either, their entrance music will hit and they'll come down to the ring, or sometimes the person will just be on the video screen. That's what I thought was going to happen, because Pat McAfee just kept talking and kept talking and kept talking. And I thought, surely this is going to be interrupted by somebody. I don't know who it would be. It's definitely not going to be Rich Holland. He's hurt. And it's not probably not Adam Cole, but I thought somebody was going to interrupt him, but nobody did. Somebody probably should have, because I don't know how long this went, but it felt like a very long time. If this were in the hands of somebody who wasn't an excellent promo like McAfee, and Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch, and Pete Dunne providing excellent backup, I think that this would have been bad. It just dragged on for me. I tuned out a couple times just because it was going and going and going, and I kind of got the point without it going that long. And it's also just weird when the person being run down isn't there. I'm fine with them selling the beatdown that they got, Undisputed Era. So that's not a bad thing. It's just weird when you talk trash about somebody, especially for that long, and they're just not there. So they burn the... they burn the banner. They're all about to get back in the SUV, and Killian Dane runs up and he attacks Pat McAfee, because what you're not going to do is attack Killian Dane and then run away. Drake Maverick was not there. So Killian Dane's beating down McAfee, but then the other three jump onto Killian Dane and start beating him down. Pete Dunne hits Killian Dane until Killian Dane is basically... it's weird to explain with words. If you were to open your car door and then sit with your back against the car, so you're sitting on the ground, you're looking at the door, and your back is to where the door would be, but it's open. Like, if the door were slim, you'd be wedged in the car. And then Pete Dunne kicks the driver's side door, slamming it into Killian Dane. Looked brutal. I liked that it was Pete Dunne that did it. It seems like the dynamic we have going here is that Pat McAfee is like a rich kid who bought some friends. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch are kind of the goofballs that have been looked over and now weaseled their way into being champions. And Pete Dunne is the super serious one who doesn't even really seem to maybe like them. He's just here to hurt people. And I like that it's a Pete Dunne that clearly wants to hurt people. He stomped on Kyle O'Reilly's arm the other week. He's now tried to kill a guy with a car door. And even McAfee was joking that, like, that was a little bit too far. We'll talk it out. I think there's some interesting seeds being planted already with the group, and that Pete Dunne doesn't seem to fit. He's a little intense for this group. But I dig it. So, they all jump in the car and drive off. Cuts over to Killian Dane, and Killian Dane is bleeding from the mouth bad. Like, they do the WWE version of blood, which is to say they're not going to blade, but they can, like, movie magic some blood. So they cut over. Killian Dane's laying on his side on the pavement, and there's like a pool of blood where it would have come out of his mouth, kind of thing. So that's a situation where you kind of want to have blood. If somebody kicks a car door into your face, something's gonna, I don't know what specifically, but something in there's gonna bleed from that car door. So they messed up Killian Dane. So he has some stuff now between this group, Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. You also had some stuff between Drake Maverick and Killian Dane because he wasn't there. It's cool. I dig all this. And I love what it does for Pete Dunne. Johnny's at home. He has the North American title next to him. He's playing, I don't know if it was Chutes and Ladders or what it was. It's a game that has a wheel, and Johnny's saying how much he loves wheels because he said before last week that he hated wheels. He won, so now he loves wheels. Johnny's a great heel, and he's great. He's saying that he loves wheels, and that he loves making history, being the first two-time North American champion. His phone rings, and the Scream Mask guy says, "They're in the house." And then Johnny says, "Yeah, I know, you're right next to me." And it cuts over, and Scream is right next to Johnny. that registers to me like something that was going to be a joke. It's one of those jokes where they forgot the funny part. That's fine. You're not going to hit every time. Sometimes WWE thinks stuff is funny that I don't. This is fine. I do like that Johnny said that he's going to defend the title next week against a worthy opponent. I like that because if Johnny gets to pick, it's definitely not going to be a worthy opponent, and I just can't wait to see who he picks. He talks about how people think that he can win titles but not defend them successfully. What, are you going to lose it on your first title defense? Which is an interesting way to bring up his history, because in the past he has had trouble defending the titles that he wins. He's known for, you know, winning big matches when he has to, but then once he's at the mountaintop, maybe not so much, I guess. Which is interesting. I hadn't thought about it before. I like that the Scream Mask guy is just sitting there, so that means that Johnny's making the person still wear that mask and outfit, but also hang out in his house, which is just great. And then our main event, Toni Storm, Shotzi Blackheart. I believe Shotzi loses, but I didn't quite catch it because the point of this was that it cuts to the video screen on top, and Candice LeRae, who's outside, starting to zoom out, and it shows that Shotzi's mini tank thing is in the street, and a car pulls up. It's dark, and you can see it looks like a big truck, like a monster truck almost, comes up, and Candice goes to stop the car and then gets around to the driver's side and gets in the car. She looks at the camera from the driver's side and said, "This is what happens when you put your nose into other people's business." Candice LeRae then runs over that mini tank with that truck, and it shows Shotzi in the ring, and boy, Shotzi acts exactly the same way as Bray Wyatt did when he was in the ring and Randy Orton burned down his house. The real devastated about this kind of thing. And with Bray Wyatt, made sense because it's a house. Shotzi, it feels like you could get another mini tank. Also, not sure why your mini tank was out in the road, or if Candace stole it, why you don't lock your mini tank. It's a mini tank. Somebody's going to try and steal it, Shotzi. But it was just like Bray Wyatt getting his house burned down, which is great when you think about the fact that it is just a mini tank that she doesn't even use that often. So she runs over the tank, looks back into the camera, said, "You stole the women's championship from me. We're even." And then the Scream Mask person is in the back seat, so it seems as though there are indeed two different Scream Mask people. Presumably Indy Hartwell for Candace and Austin Theory for Johnny. This is really good. Last week, the Scream Mask lady was carrying Candice LeRae up the ladder when Shotzi Blackheart interfered and grabbed Scream Mask and basically did the electric chair drop and got them out of there. She didn't directly cost Candice the title in that she didn't like knock Candice off the ladder or anything, but she did take away the person that was helping Candice to win the title. So I like that that's important. I like that Candice came back and took something from her. Now we have a story with Candace and Shotzi, and it makes sense. If you cost me a match, even though I tried to cheat, if you cost me a match, I'm going to do something to you. Awesome. Love it. Toni Storm then comforts Shotzi in the ring as Shotzi's very upset about her miniature tank. It is funny to see two people wrestle a really good match, and then one person has to comfort another person specifically because their mini tank got run over. That's one of those things that if I had to explain this to a non-wrestling fan, there's no way I'd get through it. They wouldn't listen to the whole thing. Actually, this wasn't our main event, but in fairness to me, we cut to Velveteen Dream in the ring, and you guys know how I feel about that. I have a tough time separating art from artist, and I don't know what did or didn't happen, but everything feels weird now when I see Velveteen Dream. So I don't generally watch his stuff, and it sucks because Ciampa's out next. We're telling some version of a story between Ciampa, Dream, and Kushida, I would assume. So I like watching Ciampa, but I be honest, I didn't watch it. I fast forward it to Ciampa hitting the fairy tale ending and winning. I've said before that it just for me personally, I don't know how you feel, but the stuff with Velveteen Dream feels swept under the rug to some degree. I don't know what did or didn't happen. It just makes me feel uncomfortable, especially given the nature of the gimmick in the first place. It's kind of an in-your-face sexuality thing, which now felt like it wasn't going to work on the main roster because it feels like gold dust, but now feels uncomfortable, and so now I am uncomfortable watching his matches. Maybe one day we find out everything was not true, and we can go from there, but for now, I don't like watching wrestling with people who make me feel uncomfortable, so I don't. And sorry I missed the match, but you can always check it out yourself as well. But that means, with that match, that NXT is over for the week. So, that means my time is almost up. I do hope you have enjoyed the show today. Obviously, a step down from Halloween Havoc, but we do have some interesting things going on. Breezango's challenging for the tag team titles next week, and Johnny Gargano defends the North American title against his presumably hand-picked opponent. So we should have some fun stuff. With my time almost up, I do want to remind you, you can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT, that's at ZachNXT. Again, we're always talking about wrestling. I usually get my news and notes stuff from there, so anything you want to hear on the show, you can let me know over there. In the meantime, this means I will see you next week. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic as always, and thank you for listening.